Hello, welcome to the Mark and Embark podcast by Scout My Trip. My name is Vineet and I'm going to be your host for this episode. A big thank you to all those tuning in this no-nonsense podcast about traveling smartly. Each episode will exclusively delve in destinations, offbeat locations, places to experience, hidden gems, travel news, wandering people, and how to travel sustainably. Come, let's mark and embark to make more memories per kilometer.
Before we begin this episode, we'd like to take a minute to talk about Scout My Trip. That's us, in case you are wondering. For the first time in the world, we've introduced travel planning subscriptions starting at just ₹1,999. That's less than $30 for 6 months and goes up to an entire year of stress-free travel planning by local travel experts called Scouts. They are currently available in India, Nepal, and Bhutan and soon expanding to Southeast Asia and Europe. Scouts are your travel mavens who know a place inside out and can curate that perfect journey depending upon your dates, budget, and interests. It does not end with planning alone. They are in touch with you via a mobile app for the entire journey, and this does not require you to meet them or take care of their expenses. Scout My Trip was recently awarded the National Entrepreneurship Award by the Government of India for supporting sustainable travel and empowering scouts. So every paid subscription goes a long way in supporting them and their families. We have something special for all our listeners. To know more about it, stick around till the end of the episode. And without further ado, the episode.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mark and Embark podcast. It's again great to be back. And this is another phenomenal interview we're going to have with a very special gentleman. And before I kind of introduce him, I want to talk a bit about what he's done in the past. So he's been an IT professional. He's worked with companies like Dell, IBM, Tesco. But you know something, that's not the reason why he's here. So let me welcome Sharad Chinoy on this episode of the Mark and Embark podcast. Welcome, Sharad.
Hey, Vineet. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the opportunity to be part of this event.
Let's hope this becomes a gala event. For now, it's a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I've been listening to you from a long time and always wanted to be a part of it.
Oh, yeah. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Sharad. I mean, being a biker myself, it's one of the reasons I love talking to bikers and especially such crazy bikers, if I may use that word like you, is because it gives me goosebumps myself.
Yeah, I think we should do
it. Yeah, so, you know, a bit about Sharad in terms of how I have also followed him everywhere on social media. A big fan of your Instagram, by the way, Sharad.
Thank you.
So, anyone listening, if you want to check out Sharad, we'll have it in the show notes. But he's Sharad_Chinoy, Instagram. So, Sharad, let's go right to the beginning, okay?
I was born in Cochin, in a place called Mattancheri. Born and brought up there. And I studied in Dronacharya, that's by the beach. So, I had enough and more of sea by my side all through. And after I did my graduation and stuff like that, we shifted to Bangalore. That is about 20 years ago. And the last 5-6 years, I've seen me roaming around the country much more than Kerala or Bangalore. So, I have spend very less time in Kerala or Bangalore in the last 5 years. It's been across the country on different motorcycles, which has been a brilliant experience altogether.
Oh, we'll love to talk about the bikes in a bit.
Oh, yes.
So, how did you kind of get into traveling? Before even getting to biking, so was there somebody who kind of gave you this travel bug in your family, or was it somebody from outside who inspired you to kind of take this up?
Motorcycles have been part of my life from, I don't know, beyond. My dad used to ride motorcycles to work and back as commuters. And then he had this passion for the classic motorcycles. And he used to come home with a bag full of bike parts. Like, you know, some guys would have burned the bike. Some guys would have just let it die. He would buy the bike for a scrap value, come sit on it with his friend. With a lot of rounds of rum, the bike gets put together and he rides. And so that's what I've seen. So a lot of time has gone building the motorcycle from scratch. I've seen bikes that's come out of this workshop, which I thought it'll never, because I've spent about a year and a half, two with him, and the bike never. One fine day, the bike comes out and it looks like it just come out of a showroom, you know. Beautiful bikes. And he rides for a bit.
Your dad had a garage of his own?
No, he didn't. So his friend had. So my dad used to work in Cochin Port, and one of his colleagues had a garage. I think it's only my dad's bike used to be built there, because whenever I've landed there, I've seen my dad and him sitting on the bike and working. I've not seen any other bikes coming there. So I think it was just their own setup. I don't remember. So that was there, and he used to get the bikes built, ride for a bit. And if someone asks, do you want to sell the bike? He would just give a random name, random price to it, because he didn't want to sell it. And that guy would be ready to buy it, and he would just bring home the money. And my dad is like, what do we do now? He's like, okay, chuck it, let's sell it, and we'll buy another bike and stuff. So he never went beyond 40 or 50 kilometers from where we were, like the nearest temple or nearest location and stuff. And then I figured he was missing out on the fun of enjoying the motorcycle that he's built for, you know, so long. And I figured, whatever motorcycle I pick in, I want to ride beyond that 50 or 100 kilometers and explore what's there. And that's when the first round of 50 kilometers, 60 kilometers, 100 kilometers started. And then I started exploring a bit more, because I figured my, you know, comfort zone, the cocoon is around 300. Let me expand from there, even to 100, then 200. And then I met a lot of interesting people who have traveled around the world and are still around riding motorcycles and talking about it in so much energy. And I said, I want to be part of that energy, and no other way of being a part of it unless you ride it. You can only hear the stories for so long. You want to go on to make your own experiences that you could share with people. And that's how the motorcycling happened.
That's quite a story. I mean, you know, funny thing about dads, you know, they have a very, very weird way of kind of inspiring you to do things. Like,
yeah,
my dad inspired me to travel by just shoving me into the car.
Oh, shit.
Literally, I used to be a kid and he used to pick me up from the bed and throw me into the car, and that's how I remember my childhood trips.
Wow. So, I remember a time when I was a hand carry kind of a baby, you know, very young, maybe what, under 2 years or whatever. And he was riding a classic, SD classic, T250. And I was sleeping on the tank. So, he would put a small towel on the tank and put me on it so that I'm sleeping. And my mom was behind holding my sister, and they have done temple runs like that. And everyone used to tell my mom and dad, saying that, boss, you're going to spoil this kid. You're going to, you know, they're going to have some issues when they grow up with all the motorcycles and the vibrations and stuff. And everybody used to just give this, you know, looks at my mom and dad when they're riding around with us. But then, thankfully, nothing happened. We're all good and healthy.
That's good to know, yeah. I mean, it's really quite a journey. So, this for everyone who's listening to this podcast. So, Sharad professionally is a ride organizer. He works with some of the biggest motorcycling brands in India right now, and we'll talk about that as well. And he's been, you know, in the real sense, he's been influencing buyer behavior when it comes to biking. And there is a lot that he has done with specific brands. In fact, if I were to name, Sharad, you started off with Mahindra first up, right, with the Mojo?
Was that the first project?
Yeah,
Mahindra was first. So, I did some photography event along with Royal Enfield. I used to land up on their rides and be their photographer on the move. I've done a couple of that. And then I got a big project with Mahindra. That was my turning point. So the thing is, a friend of mine, Abhijit Rao, he calls me one day and he says, you know what, Sharad, there is a company trying to do something on a motorcycle, and it's going to be an all-expense-paid trip of 42 days, and you get to travel around the country. Do you want to do it? I'm like, when do I start? He's like, yeah, that doesn't matter, as I called you for, because he knew not everybody could take time out and travel, and I was the guy. He said, when do you want to start? I said, I'm ready to start tomorrow. He's like, do you want to know about the motorcycle? I said, no, anything for the matter, I'm ready to ride out. Then he tells me about the Mojo. So Mojo was being, it was ready. It was a pre-prod bike, and they were ready to launch the bike. They wanted a final feedback. We flew into Pune. They gave us the motorcycle, and they said, you know what, ride until it breaks. And then call us from wherever you are. There was this guy called Kyle Pereira. And I said, okay, we rode the bike. We rode until Kolkata. We went to Delhi. Then we rode back to Bangalore. The guy who was riding with me met with an accident. So we had to kind of can the ride. But we were trying to overtake a car. And suddenly a dog runs across. And this guy jams the brakes, you know, and goes over the handlebar and has a fall. And nothing happens to him. But that kind of he kind of gets skinned out a bit. And gets, slightly tired and weak to ride ahead. So we land up in Delhi. And then, you know, let's just scan it wrong. And we could always go back and start the ride again. So, we finished the ride in Delhi. The bikes were sent back, and I think someone else took over the bikes, and we flew back to Bangalore.
Wow. So, how was this entire experience with Mahindra? I believe you worked with them for close to around 4 years?
Around 3.5 years. So, about 6-7 months was the prototype testing part. And then about 3 years where I worked with them as a consultant, organizing rides, starting from around Bangalore, 40-300 kilometers. to across the country, like let it be Arunachal, let it be Ladakh, let it be Rajasthan, or even the coastal part of it. So pretty much about, we had 6 or 7 rides annually that we used to do under the Mahindra umbrella called Mojo Tribe Rides. And right. Take people on motorcycle trips and give them experience. Some guys, we train them on how to ride motorcycles in different terrains and add value to them and, you know, let them come home with an experience. They could ride with us or ride out themselves across the country, wherever they feel, however they feel.
So you were, if I were to kind of sum it up, a national community manager for them?
Yes, you could call that, yeah.
You rode Mojo for quite some time. How would you rate it out of 5?
1 to 5, 5 being the best?
Yes, 5 being the best, yes.
5 being the best. I would want to give it a 4 because the engine is brilliant, but there were some design ideas that I don't really connect with that are slightly oldish, I would say. But the engine was a brilliant. It was like, you know, I did about 100,000 kilometers on my motorcycle that is still standing at my parking. And the bike is brilliant. It's like the way it runs, the way it handles, the engine is amazing. It's about, I have cruised at 120 constantly for about 6-7 hours. And there is no other motorcycle that can ride more than that, you know. After starting to ride around the country, I started timing how long I would take or how quick I can reach somewhere, because Bangalore to Chandigarh and Bangalore to Kolkata, I have done it so many times that I didn't want to do it anymore. So next time I want to do it again. So I'm like, okay, last time I did in 3 days. This time I'm going to do it in 2 days. And we started doing that because the roads were, you know, on back of our hands type, and the bike was ready to help us push how much we want. That's how it's been. It's been a brilliant motorcycle.
If you were to look at Mahindra Mojo as a bike and their journey, so they were not able to really create too much noise in the biking circles. What do you think didn't work for them?
So the thing is, I think the design, the way it came out, is something that people didn't understand. Mainly because by the time Mojo came out, a lot of people were waiting for Mojo to be launched. I think about 4-5 years of waiting and stuff like that. And when the bike came, the market was already taken over by KTM. There were so many dukes around that people are already, you know, having the term value for money coming into picture, saying that if I pay 2.4 lakhs, I have a 400cc motorcycle that throws in so much power. And why would I buy a bike that is about 2.5 lakhs that is much underpowered than a 390? Yeah, so a lot of people didn't want to buy the Mojo because of that. But then I figured out a lot of people who have been really touring on the motorcycle, like a lot of guys who have been riding Charisma for so many years, they went on to migrate from Charisma to Mojo. Because they realized Charisma does all that they want, but it was underpowered for today's date. And then the moment they rode the Mojo, they're like, boss, I get the same engine performance and the reliability, and I can do much more. And the bloody 21-liter tank that comes on the Mojo, that has been you know, boon when I was riding that, and that's been a pain now, because the same terrain that I'm riding the other motorcycles now, I run out of fuel and I end up pushing the motorcycle. Because I never look into the fuel gauge. And I'm like, last time I did point A to point B, but on this motorcycle, I have to do point A plus one, fill up more, carry extra fuel, and then make it to point B, you know. So, that's been an issue, yeah.
So, Mahindra did check out all the boxes to make a good tourer, but I, from what I sense, the timing was not great.
Correct, and, yeah.
Personally, I've heard great feedback about the bike. Anyone who owned that bike had a lot of good things to say. But it was kind of unfortunate, they just missed the bus.
Absolutely. And now I think the new versions that's coming in, they're bringing the dual channel ABS and reducing the weight and doing some more visual modifications to the motorcycle. That's kind of slowly impressing the new crowd. But then I think the sales is slow, but I feel it's going to slowly pick up now.
I want to hear more about what inspired you. How crazy were you to kind of decide to go on trail?
What I figured out is, you know, like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But raid was the, you know, the extreme part of it. I had no rally experience and I have never had any training, formal training on how to ride motorcycles and such like that. But then I have ridden with people who have helped me push beyond the comfort zones. And I believed raid might be a good opportunity because I had quit my IT job and I was about 4 years ago. I was still younger and physically able. So I figured if I can do it now, and even if something goes wrong, like breaking a leg or neck or whatever, I still had good amount of time for myself to recover from something than what I would be after 4 or 5 years. Like about now I'm 36. After 3 years, if I go attempt a raid and I break something, it's going to take much longer for me to recover, and then it's going to put much more bigger dent on my finance than that. And then when I spoke to Mahindra, they were like, you have some madness about something, let's go do it. And they were happy to support me on what I did and went on to do the raid with the minimal budget possible. And then first attempt at it, I was running second. But then towards the end of it, I had a fall, picked up the motorcycle, then went on to finish fifth in an alpine category. That was like big for me because that was beautiful.
And the last trade you did was on the Bajaj Dominar 400.
Correct. Yeah.
So how did this compare with the Mojo?
So Dominar was slightly more lighter compared to the Mojo. And the whole chassis design was much more flexible in terms of modifying it. Because Mojo, the tank itself is about, it's a 20 liter tank, it's huge. Plus the chassis, the way it was, is much more heavier. But on the Dominar, a lot of things that I could change with a lighter component or fine tune it or modify it, which would make the bike a bit more flexible in the way you want to make it for the rally. So we even plonked from a 17 inch wheels on the front and back. I plonked a 19 in the front, 17 in the back. And the play around with the handlebar, play around with the seating, exhaust, a lot of things. But on the Mojo, that was not possible because the base bike itself was heavy. And the Dominar being a 400cc and a 27 or a 32bhp motorcycle, 35bhp motorcycle, it had more power to tackle these kind of terrains, which made it a bit more easier for me to go on to finish it.
Yeah, and you know, while Kumaraj, you came third in your category.
No, I was third in my category, yes, yeah.
And so do you think, of course, you know, the Dominar was a slightly more superior bike compared to the Mojo. But would you, is it right to attribute any of that to the bike? Because I personally believe it's more the man than the machine.
So that is there. But then if you have the right tool for the job, it makes it much more easier. Because otherwise you're fighting it. So there are a lot of people who would bring bigger bikes to raid and break their fingers and go home. So we had a couple of people riding, I don't want to name the bikes or the people, but then they were riding bigger bikes, that's 800cc plus. Had falls at some places where they couldn't really play around with the motorcycle and then crashed, broke their fingers on the day one and then they had to just sit back and relax, you know. So a lighter, slightly tuned motorcycle would do a good job, like a right tool for the job types.
So anyone, you know, who's planning to do raid, is there anything you'd like to tell them? Any one advice you'd like to give them?
Understand your motorcycle and you don't have to do a lot of modifications on the bike. How much you know about the motorcycle is what's going to help you at the raid. Because raid is not about what kind of motorcycle you're riding. It's about how much you can handle day after day. So you have two different categories, alpine and extreme. Alpine is 3 days and extreme is 6 days. And 6 days you have to be up at 4:30 in the morning, be on the line. You might get flagged off at 7:30 when it's about minus 10 degrees. You have to rally with similar amount of mad people there, finish, come home, rest, get your bike fixed, get up in the morning and do the same thing for 6 days. So your stamina, your patience and all that you run out of is what's going to be pushed to build that. And any motorcycle would do anything.
And it's then it comes down to purely the man. If I
absolutely.
Go by...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And the bike is just a tool, you know, the CC and everything else is just secondary.
Absolutely, yeah. People are doing it on scooters. There is a guy who was riding a Bajaj Calibre, that is about 20-year-old motorcycle. He was riding with me and he was out because he had a puncture. Otherwise, he would have been way ahead and way faster off than me. That is a Calibre, Bajaj Calibre, which is supposed to be a commuter motorcycle. And he was there with that.
Coming to Bajaj Calibre, do you remember that advertisement they had? One of the most iconic bike advertisements, at least, you know, from my growing up years. This man is riding a Calibre and he goes to, I think, propose his girl.
Yeah.
And I think that said a lot about the bike.
Absolutely.
I think they carried that legacy forward of the old Bajaj ads.
Yeah, Hamara Bajaj.
So, coming to the third project that you've worked on now, I think the latest one is Java.
Yeah.
So, you're back to the Mahindra stable in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how's the Java? Spell it out. I think there's a lot of talk about the bike, but there aren't too many that you see on the road.
Correct, yeah. So, people who say, I have ridden an old Java and now I'm not going to buy the new Java, a lot of people talk about it. They compare it with a two-stroke with a four-stroke. The emotions get carried away and they're like, oh, it doesn't sound like a two-stroke. It doesn't run like the bike that I used to ride. It will not, because it is a four-stroke motorcycle with a lot of norms as per 2019-2020. So, if you forget the legacy and all the stuff, if you ride a motorcycle, Java as part of it is a nice motorcycle. It's not like a main tourer motorcycle. It's a classic commuter motorcycle or a city tourer, you could say. You could do an 80, 100, 200 kilometer ride, come home, get rest, do another ride for the matter. But you will not be able to do rides like what we have been doing so far. But I'll get to know more because I'm taking off on a 10,000 kilometer ride in a couple of days. And I would be riding it from Konark in Puri till Kanyakumari to Kotkoteshwar. That's going to be a 10,000 kilometers on the coast and on the new Java 42. So I would have a clear idea of what this motorcycle can or cannot do in about, say, 40 days from now.
But this bike does check out, you know, have those tick marks against it, right? It's oil cooled, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, so it's similar to the Mojo engine. It's a liquid cooled engine. It's water. It's coolant. And it's a 300cc, 27bhp, I think 27nm torque motorcycle. And the seating is nice. There is minor mods that needs to be done. Seating is nice. The brakes are good. The engine, the way the bike is designed, gives it a classic look. And best of it all, it's a light motorcycle. You can stop at some traffic signal. You want to take a U-turn, you can do it right there. You don't have to worry about dropping the motorcycle or anything. It's just brilliantly made that way.
That's good to know. So, have you done any small rides on the Java as yet? I believe you were in Lunavala, Pune, somewhere.
Correct. So, we picked up the bikes from Pune. This is actually, I'm not doing a project with Java directly. I'm doing a project with a brand called Pogo, where we are tracking routes and trails across the country. That way, any new person who wants to ride, they have everything available on a particular app. So, we're going to do that. Yeah, so we picked up the bike from the factory and rode up to this place called Khopoli. That is about 80 kilometers from Pune, where the 4-hour riders meet was going on. And that is one of the neat Java event that happened. So we went there, spent some time, met a lot of people, a lot of old friends and new friends. And then we rode out from there, came back to Pune after 2 days. And then I rode it down to Bangalore. So that's what I have done so far, about maybe 1,000 kilometers on the new Java so far.
And, okay, let's go back to the Dominar. So, Dominar, how do you rate it out of 5? 5 being the highest.
So I would give it a 4 for sure. I would give it a 4.5. Because Mojo, I'm giving a 4. I would give Dominar the 4.5. Because it has everything that you need for a 2019 or a 2020 motorcycle. The bike is not really heavy. It's got all the technical features that you would look for from a 2-2.5 lakhs motorcycle. And the reliability is definitely there. We rode the bike. I would want to use the term abused, because I have learned to ride a bike like I stole it. For me, if I can't ride it like I stole it, I don't ride it at all, because I spend all my time planning to do one ride a year. And if I don't enjoy it the way I want it, I don't want to do it. So that's continued, though I do a lot of rides every year. So we did about 24,000 kilometers on a particular motorcycle, starting from Delhi to Ladakh, to Zanskar, to Spiti, to Uttarakhand, to Nepal, to Sikkim, to Arunachal. That is the roof of the world ODC. That's about 17,000 kilometers, and then the rest of it for me to ride back home. The bike had no breakdowns. I had 3 punctures to name all across. Apart from that, the bike just performed effortlessly. And we were just gunning it, jumping around with whatever we could. And it's been a pleasure.
My God, that's a lot of abuse the bike has taken.
Yeah.
And Himalayas are definitely not your everyday highway.
Yeah, and to be frank, the kind of terrains we took, I think out of the 17,000 kilometers we did, easily about 14,000 odd were back roads or broken roads. We tried to skip or stay away from the main highway so that we could really enjoy the authentic part of the place that we go into. We even went to Zanskar, we went to Spiti, then we went to this Upper Mustang. That is one of the toughest terrains is around the country that could be offered, and we went there and the bikes performed effortlessly, and we rode back without a breakdown and no support vehicle and shit like that. So that was like brilliant.
So in this Roof of the World Odyssey that Bajaj had organized, which terrain or which region was maybe your favorite or maybe the toughest? Okay, let's go with your favorite and then the toughest.
Favorite is Uttarakhand. I didn't know Uttarakhand had a lot of things beyond Rishikesh, Haridwar and Badrinath and all the temples that we talk about. There is a place called Terry Dam, and we rode 48 kilometers by the banks of the dam, and we still couldn't get over it. The lake is so huge. I'm told if the dam breaks, the whole of Delhi gets washed out. And we rode at least about 4 hours by the side of the dam, and every turn we took, the dam one vanished. We took a turn, came back again out, and the dam was right there, and the water was there. And we rode from what, about 2:30 till 6:30 or 7, and the dam was right there. The water, and that was beautiful. That was the biggest ever that I've ever seen, and that was just a eye opener for me. That was epic. And the toughest was Upper Mustang. It was not really toughest, but then the hype that people had made about how the terrain is going to be and stuff like that kind of made it feel tougher. But I believe Zanskar was much more tiring than Upper Mustang.
Definitely. In fact, Zanskar, I think, is going to be like the next place serious riders are going to try and go for. Because I think they've done a lot of Ladakh. They've done quite a bit of Spiti as well.
Yeah.
But I think Zanskar is still that one place in that northern Himalayan belt which they've not done.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think that's what's going to be getting, you know, messed up soon.
And it's as raw as it can get, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, so Sharad, we've spoken a fair bit about your travel over the last 6 to 7 years now. What are some of the things that you've really learned? Personally, what has biking taught you in these years?
Places are not going anywhere. This is something that I learned from the big man Nowruz contractor. He's about 65-year-old guy and one of the guys, very few guys who've ridden from India to Germany via Pakistan to get one of his bikes serviced. That's another story for another time. But after riding with him, I've learned, not just seen a lot of people, but one thing that stuck with me about him was places are not going anywhere. Everybody is so in a hurry to go to Ladakh, to Arunachal, to Nepal, to whatever. They want to just go there and come. Just tick off their resume of biking saying that I have been here, I have been there. But then they forget about the experience that would change or add value to themselves when they spend more time there and experience the people, experience whatever that place has to offer. So ride slow, even if you can't make it to the destination, that's fine, but the ride from home to that particular place where you rode itself is going to bring a lot of things. So take a U-turn, come back, maybe plan better and go there. The place is not going to go anywhere. You might make it easier to reach the next time, but then experience might be the same.
In fact, you know, a lot of travelers today talk about something called slow travel.
Ah, yeah.
Right, so do you connect with slow travel or is it not
yes.
your
copy? That is my. So initially, when I was working in corporate, I had 10 days or 15 days of leaves. So I had to go to wherever and I wanted to come back. And I always wanted to do home to home, like riding from home to Nepal to back to Bhutan to back to Arunachal to back. Wherein easily about 7-8 days were spent going to the place and coming back. And maybe about 3 days were spent only staying there, which I realized was not really making any help up because even I was there to say that I've been to so many places. But later I realized it's better to ride one way, spend more time there and enjoy, or ride slower, like from point A to point B, like from here to Hyderabad, half a day, take a break, ride, enjoy. Then from there, ride further slow, stay in one place for another day or 2 days and then ride ahead. So that brings in more experience. That's what I'm planning to do with the coastal ride that I'm planning right now, where it's only about 8,000 kilometers across the coast. But I'm going to take almost about 100 days to do that, which would mean there are some days I'm doing 200 kilometers, some days I'm going to do 50, 60 and just chill, and some days I would just take a break at all together.
You know, it's I totally connect with you when you said it's only 8,000 kilometers. But a lot of people who are listening to this episode, they're like, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
They just say only 8,000 kilometers.
I just thought that when I was saying it. So for me, kilometers have just become numbers right now. Because for me, any trip that I do is usually about 3 weeks or 4 weeks plus. And that usually is from this part of the country to the other and back. And that usually is 6,000, 7,000 kilometers plus without any question. And this is quality time there. And as I said, from Bangalore to Delhi and Bangalore to Chandigarh or Bangalore to Kolkata, I've done so many times that my time that's going to take from here to there is about 2.5 days. And then rest of the time is spent there. I mean, you can call it a slightly rough riding for the matter of it. But then, you know, over the years of experience over the last 2.5-3 lakh kilometers in the last 4 years, skill level has gotten slightly better. So, yeah.
Now, you know, coming back to this particular year, 2020. Mm. So, what was your resolution for this year?
Travel even more.
That's fair to say. But, okay, so what?
So, stay away from home as much as possible.
So, what are some of the places you're planning?
So, Nepal is definitely on the list because Upper Mustang, the way things are, you might have a blacktop from Pokhara to Upper Mustang in the next 3 or 4 years, the way the roads are being done. So I want to experience that adrenaline once more. Stay in Lomantang for about a week because you pay about $500 to go there just for the permit. So you as well utilize that by staying there for a few days and come back. That is there. And the biggest dream that I have on my list for a very long time is Cambodia, Vietnam. That's been there on my list for I don't know how many years. I think I will put that in shape and if possible, a month, if not 2 or 3 months, a month at least for sure, go stay there, be a local, travel around on their, you know, tiny 150, 100cc motorcycles or cycles for that matter, experience it the bare minimum and then come back. Because that would be a ride for myself and not for any other brands.
So, which would be your bike of choice for that one?
I don't think I'm going to take any motorcycles with Matt. I would just land up there and take any motorcycle that's available there. Because that would work out much more cheaper for me that way. We have a lot of Hondas and Kawasaki's and Chinese bikes available there. That is 100 or 150 cc's. Like those Splendors that we have here. Under 10 or 8 bhp motorcycles. That would be apt for those kind of terrains where it can't go fast. And that is a slow country where you could explore, drink local wine, spend time, eat local food, meet local people, have fun, and then come back.
So, you know, there's a lot of talk about the India to Thailand route. And people, you know, there are quite a few bikers who have done RTW.
RTW
is for those who are listening and ride around the world.
Yeah.
So, are you at any point of time planning something like an RTW?
I don't know. So, the thing is, I don't know if I'm ready for a long ride because I feel homesick and I want to come home at least for a day or two. And that is one of the reasons I have kept my rides around India. But maybe in 2021, I would want to ride around Africa a bit and then come because ride around the world, trust me, so coming back to India, people would say I have done all India in 30 days or 40 days. We did 130 days. Across the Himalayas, and there is still so much more that we couldn't experience or be a part of. So, if I have to call it a round-the-world trip, if it's just running from point A to point B for the numbers for a bit, you could do it in 360 days. But to want to be spending more time and experiencing them because of the money that you're going to put in, I would want to do it for a couple of years. Like Jake and I took about 3.5 years to ride from US to India. He explored all of Africa and came home. I think he took about 3.5 years. And he still has much more to be explored. So I think he's planning another ride to go down there and do it. So, someday, I don't know, maybe after 2021, 2022, when there is enough money or a big sponsor who could support me for a slow run. Or I win a lottery or something like that.
So, tell us about this journey with working with brands. Is there too much pressure to kind of, you know, deliver on some things? How does it work for you?
So, so as I said earlier, so people think brand would give you money and bike and all their opportunities just because you have so many numbers or so many followers or whatever. There are those cases also, but kind of events or the kind of rides that we are doing, it's not easy for any and everybody to do it because to be able to ride a motorcycle across the country for different kind of terrains is not a cup of coffee for everyone. It's just going to be really nerve-breaking. And a lot of brands are looking for deliverables. They're looking for end of the day sales of a motorcycle. So whatever you do should adhere to that. But lucky for me, the brands that I've worked with, I've told them, boss, I'm not going to give you numbers on how many bikes I've sold because of this ride. But I'll ensure people who think your motorcycle cannot do this, I will ensure they have a better idea end of this ride. Because people think only adventure motorcycles can do Upper Mustang. I did that on a Domina. And we were riding by the neck of CRF 250s and stuff. That bikes are more comfortable to ride, not Dominar version, because it's not built. But maybe half an hour, 1 hour late, we were there. They reached, they were just removing their gears and we were there. So we could do it. Let it be for the Mojo for that part of it. Mojo people thought it's a touring bike, it's a heavy bike, can't do it. With a minor mod, we went on to finish raid with that too, no skills on it. And that helped a lot of brands to capitalize on their sales and stuff on that. So that is one of the reasons why the brands work with me.
And then that's the same thing that you did with the Dominar as well when you came in the category.
Correct, yes. So a lot of people thought Dominars couldn't do it and people are like alloy wheels would break and this and that and stuff like that. So raids, I had modified the bike extensively because we had to do it. But when we did this ride, 24,000 kilometers, we have not broken anything on the bike. And people who know the way I ride, they know I jump around and abuse it and nothing is broken. So that itself has helped a lot of people have that confidence on this motorcycle saying that I might do this ride someday, but until then, I'm going to ride this bike on my home to office. But then, this bike is capable. And brand is happy with that.
Okay. Hey, so this has been a great conversation, okay? What we're going to do is, we're going to do a quickfire round.
Yeah.
5 questions.
Okay.
And you need to be very quick in your answer.
Yeah.
Okay, so here goes.
Let's do.
What's your longest ride?
My longest ride was the current one that I finished. That is a 24,000 kilometers ride across the Himalayas.
Okay, would you prefer an off-road or a highway?
Off-road.
Which is your favorite highway?
Straight highways are boring, but Bangalore to Hyderabad would be the best so far.
Between Mojo, Dominar and Java, which one would you choose?
I would go with the Dominar.
Two-stroke or four-stroke?
I would love to ride a two-stroke. and the smoke and all that, you know, it's like brilliant.
Oh yes, I rode a Shogun for quite a few years. It was my brother, and the bike is the boss.
The current bike that I'm riding after Mojo the Domino was my last. So I have ridden about I have owned about 18 different motorcycles over the last 16, 17 or 18 years, out of which at least 7 or 8 bikes were 2 strokes. And I have way bigger or better memories on those motorcycles than on the 4 strokes. Because those bikes are mad machines. No brakes, no gears, no nothing. It will do whatever it wants to, and the grin on your face is amazing.
That's priceless. Especially when I've seen you grin, though.
Oh yeah, and the road kings and the ESPs and all the smoke. When I was working in Tesco, I used to ride in on a road king that is about 8 years ago, where there was no paint, no nothing. Oil was leaking. It was smoke was crazy, and they didn't let me park the bike in the normal parking. They would ask me to park the bike in some corner so that when the big boys from the brands come down, they don't see the bike. I said, no man, this is where I'm gonna park. It's gonna be there, and things used to be fun fighting with those people and shit like that.
So, do you still have those bikes in your garage?
No. So, I currently have only 2 bikes. The Mojo, the Dominar, and then my Enfield, my Firefly, which I initially did a lot of rides around. Other bikes I have used and sold.
Your Firefly is which model? Which year is that?
Firefly is a 2003 Enfield AVL. It's a Thunderbird, the first generation Thunderbird.
Thunderbird AVL. So, that's a 350 then?
350, yes, and it doesn't look like a Thunderbird anymore. It's like a Scrambler, and it's kept at one of my friend's store here called Highlander, and I just had the bike is parked as a night like a showpiece time.
Nice, and that's called Firefly.
It's called Firefly because most of my rides then used to be in the night, and for some reason I believe the bike came alive in the night. Not came alive, but then the bike performed effortlessly. Being a Royal Enfield, no overheating, no troubles, no leaks, or maybe I didn't see it. The bike just ran effortlessly, and I went on to call it a Firefly.
Have you given a name for your Dominar and the Mojo that you rode?
Yeah, so Mojo, I was calling it Kartiyayini. Kartiyayini is our family goddess in Ponda. So, I am a Konkani, born and brought up in Cochin. And our forefathers were from Goa and that area. So, when Mr. Vasco da Gama came, he ran away from there and whatever shit, right? So it so happened that after I got the Mojo, I ended up doing that route back-to-back about 2-3 times. Before that, I have not done Goa a lot many times or been there. And for some reason, I believed the lady there was, you know, looking down upon me and then taking care of me and stuff like that, which meant I was safe and stuff. No major accidents, no major issues. So I went on to call it Kartiyayini. And And then the Dominar, I called it Pausa, rain, because we were supposed to ride across the Himalayas in the rain starting from day one. And that's that, yeah.
And Pausa is a Marathi word, right?
Pausa is a Marathi word, yeah.
Wow, so there is a Maharashtrian influence, a Konkani influence, and...
The Konkani influence, basically. So, Konkani had a lot of Maharashtrian, and, you know, it's a mix of all that, being the coast.
Hey, so this has been great talking to you, Sharad. I mean, it's good to finally have you. It's been a while to catch you because you've always been on the road. But you've taken 1 hour off and not been riding, so that's quite an achievement even for you.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that I have got a lot of hatred around, but I would want to say this, but every Monday morning, 9:30, I put a post asking, how is your cubicle today? And that is something that really is close to me. It's about, you know, not forgetting your hobbies, your passion, and whatever your likes are. Because when you start working in a corporate industry, for various reasons, for your EMIs or the families or the lack of time, you forget what you like, and then you just went on, go on to be a machine that's running from point A to point B, and one fine day you burn out and collapse. And I was going through that, and that is when I realized I ride motorcycling and I should do more of it. And that brought in a lot of life in me, and now I am a happy guy. I don't have a bank balance, but if I want to travel, I can get away done to ensure I'm traveling, and I'm not traveling on a weekend ride, I'm traveling across the country and doing stuff that I like. A lot of people have been supportive for me in that way. So, whatever it is, put your life to what you like on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. Ensure you put some time to it. Do whatever, painting it, googling it, playing cricket, or whatever you want to do. Just spend some time and ensure you don't forget that. Let that hobby be there to keep you alive.
Those very, very powerful words, Sharad. Just following your passion, right? Do you ever hear people say, hey, you're just too lucky?
So, I stopped talking to a lot of people. There was a time when I was very choosy about whom I met or spent time with. Because when you meet somebody, they think, oh, you're lucky, your brand sponsor you. You ride a different bike, you have different gears, you have different this. But I'm like, all right, but then what phone do you have right now? Like, I have an iPhone 11, what are the new 3-camera phone is? And I'm on a phone that is, 1/10 of that price. They're like, so what difference? I said, you spend on stuff that matters more, and I spend on time or my money on what matters most. I spend my money, time, and passion, and all of efforts on doing something that I like. You don't want to do it. You like to buy a gadget, do it. You are lucky to buy that. I am lucky to do what I want to do. You also can do it. It's not that, only I am getting to do it. If you put a mind to it, you can. I paid my last EMI when I left IBM and then moved out. I was in a lot of loans and credit cards or whatever. But one fine day when I realized that this is what I want to do, I started working down onto it. And when I quit my job, IBM, the last salary that came was after I paid my last EMI. And with whatever money I had, I took off to Arunachal. And then there has been no looking back. The last 4 years, and it's been a good life.
Hey, you mentioned about you not speaking to some people, but let's talk about the people you do speak to. So, who are some of your favorite bikers?
So, there are a few people whom I really look up to. Maybe I follow them subtly without them knowing, or listen to or have them on my mind. Navroz Contractor has been one of these guys. He is a 65, 67-year-old guy, as I said earlier, been across the country and done some crazy stuff when he was young. He's one of those guys. Then there is this guy, Veer Nakai. And then Harshman Rai, who have been doing random stuff. And for my luck of it, I rode with them the last week. And for me, that was like a sense of achievement in that self. And then there are a few other people who are around the country who are doing local rides or doing whatever stuff. And yeah, there are a lot of people, but then different levels of inspiration for that matter.
Have you ever, thought of joining a club, being part of such a community wherein, you're kind of traveling some certain set of people? Do you think that will work for you ever?
No. The thing is, I really have ridden a couple of clubs and groups and stuff like that. But then, as you said earlier, as you asked, like, oh, this guy has to be very lucky to do what he's doing. They don't really take or look into the efforts that someone puts. And when you stand in front of them and tell them, they're like, oh, he's only talking because he could do it. I can't do it. I have my stuff to be worried about. And it doesn't really get into them saying that, you have to start. First, my rides were from Bangalore to Nandi Hills and back, and then to Mysore, to then to Kerala. And over about 6-7 years, I have done what I have done so far. And everybody or anybody could do it if you start somewhere. But the mindset is something that you have to build on. But so working with Highlander right now, that is what the idea is, to bring together a small community of people, maybe start from 2, 3, or 4 people, and the help them on or guide them on how they could ride along, bring some brands to help them out, stand up with the deliverables, and maybe for nothing, just live their passion. That's what's going to happen in some time, yeah.
I asked you that question, would you like to leave our listeners with a message, thinking that would be the last thing I'll ask you, but clearly not. So this has been, a phenomenal recording. I think the discussion went from quite a few things to quite a few things.
Yeah. I don't know when to stop, sorry.
No, I totally loved it. I'm sure everybody really loved listening to this. Is there anything else, that you would like to kind of also touch upon?
I would actually like to thank everybody to be able to have supported me on my passion. There are a lot of people who are non-motorcycle guys or nothing related to this being supportive in many ways. That's actually helped me be what I am right now. And being frank, if it wasn't for them, actually I had put a post on Instagram today talking about that, letting me, be a better person over the last 8-9 years. And I think that's that of it. Yeah. I don't know what else to say. Live your life to the fullest. Keep under the limits of adrenaline and go places. Because places are not going to come to you. You have to go there.
And places are also not going anywhere.
Going anywhere, yeah. You can always have the right time to do it later. That's okay. But do it someday.
Hey, thanks a lot, Sharad.
You're welcome, Vinny. That was brilliant talking to you, and I'm glad we could pull this time out. And trust me, it didn't feel like an interview. I'm just sitting and holding my phone and talking for the last 40 minutes. But then it doesn't feel that tiring. It feels very emotionally, happy.
Wish you all the luck, Sharad. More power to you. And when I say more power, not necessarily horsepower.
A little more wooden, I wouldn't complain. Couple of more BHPs.
If you like this podcast, do like, share, and subscribe to us if you haven't already. We're there on iTunes, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your daily dose of podcasts. Your rating of our podcast will help us go a long way. And until next time, make more memories per kilometer.
Thanks again for sticking around till the end. Check out scoutmytrip.com to see all our subscription plans and use the promo code podcast for a 20% off across all plans.